We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I am Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. The Milwaukee Bucks will take the court in Auburn Hills, Michigan tomorrow for a game against the Detroit Pistons. It'll be their sixth game of the season. Through their first five, the team has 2 wins and 3 losses.
It's actually pretty good for a team coming off a horrendous last season. And the community enthusiasm for the team under new coach Jason Kidd has been strong. But what does our sports contributor think? Well, let us just ask him that question. Howie Magner, it's nice to have you back.
Been counting the seconds until I could return.
And we are happy to have you. So we're talking just after the Bucks dropped a relatively close game to the Chicago Bulls and saw their record fall to 2-3. Nobody said this was going to be an easy season, but there are some early signs of life with this team.
Yeah, I was looking before the game at the record, you know, and it was actually a winnable game for the Bucks, I thought. Derrick Rose has kind of struggled with injuries, and it was kind of interesting to me that had they won that game, they would have been over 500 for the first time since the spring of 2013, which is a long time ago. Of course, they didn't. But, you know, I think if you look at how the Bucks have been doing, if you're a fan of the team, you've got to be kind of encouraged as to what you're seeing. I mean, they certainly seem to be a more energized team than they were last year.
How much of that is new players? How much of that is Jason Kidd?
Well, I'm sure it's a combination of both. I mean, I think anytime you add a player with the raw talent of Jabari Parker, then you're certainly going to get a different level of energy. I think Larry Sanders is kind of trying to rebuild himself or rejuvenate himself, and I think that has something to do with it.
It's interesting to think of a rebuilding year for a single person, but if there ever had to be one, it would be Larry Sanders.
Absolutely.
This year.
And I kind of think I thought going into the season that he was going to be a real X factor on this team. I thought he could have gone either way. And at this point on the court, he certainly appears to be trending in the positive direction. But I also think there's a lot to the fact that Jason Kidd can get to these guys in ways that perhaps Larry Drew could not. Kidd is the type of player that players the age of the Bucks on the court looked up to. They idolized him. He was a legend when he was playing. And so when he says something, you probably have a better tendency to take that to heart. You know, I don't know if it's the case with O.J. Mayo, but he certainly seems to be playing at a different level this year than last year. And I know he went through some things, particularly off the court last year, that may have affected his play. And also, I think once the Bucks realized that things were going south, maybe they weren't so concerned about trying to win as many games as they could. And so, of course, they didn't mind if O.J. Mayo sat out for half the season. But he is playing at a better level this year. Brandon Knight has had some impressive games as well. So I think if you look across the board, you're seeing a different level of effort and energy. Now, look, that doesn't mean that this is a playoff team. I still think it would be a pretty big upset if they were able to squeak into the playoffs at the 8th seed. But it has to be encouraging, knowing how young they are, knowing how little time this group has spent together, and knowing how much faith Bucks fans and the organization is putting in this core group of players to build toward the future, you have to be encouraged.
There were a lot of losses, as you kind of alluded to last year, that there was really nothing positive to take from them. So does it make sense to look at losses differently this year than last, as long as the trajectory is kind of upward?
Yeah, I mean, I've maintained all along that the most important thing for Bucks fans to focus on this year isn't the wins and the losses, but more so how they come about. Are you seeing progress from the players on the court? Are you seeing progress from how the team comes together? Are you seeing progress in how Jason Kidd gets through to them? Because, look, Jason Kidd is something of a question mark as well. He's only got one season of head coaching experience under his belt, and that was with a veteran-laden team last year. This is a completely new experience for him. So it's really hard to predict how things are going to turn out. And so you want to see him getting through to players, not just for a week or so or through the preseason, but as the season continues. You with any time you have a new coach, you want to make sure that the players are reacting to him over the long haul and that they are progressing under him, that his system is producing results. And so far, I think the early returns are good, and I think you're seeing what you would hope to see out of guys like Jabari Parker and Larry Sanders. And yeah, I think as long as you're seeing progress through the season, then whether or not they win 18 games or 28 28 games or 36 games. It doesn't really matter. It's just how are the players progressing and how is the team progressing as a whole.
You mentioned Jason Kidd's first year behind the bench was last year in a veteran-laden team. Quick sidebar, what do you make of the war of words between the owner of the Brooklyn Nets and Jason Kidd, now coaching in Milwaukee?
I'm entertained, and I love the fact that a Russian billionaire is willing to stand in front of the media and say, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. I think that's great. And I thought it was equally great that Jason Kidd responded by basically challenging him to a game of one-on-one. So I think it makes for great theater for fans, and I'm sure there's some personal, you know, animosity between them. But look, the owners in New Jersey, Jason Kidd's in Milwaukee, in the grand scheme of things, it probably doesn't matter, but it's certainly entertaining.
He really kind of is the Russian version of Mark Cuban.
There you go. Absolutely.
To football, and the Packers are coming off a bye week, which was good news for Aaron Rodgers' sore hamstring. The Packers were banged up and run away from in their last game, a loss to New Orleans, a game that illustrated some of this team's weak links.
Yeah, I think anytime Aaron Rodgers is not playing at 100% of his capability, then the Packers are in trouble because so much of what they do is centered around so much of what he does, and he has to be at 100%. Now, look, is Aaron Rodgers at 80% better than 90% of the quarterbacks out there? Yeah, probably. But the Packers are so geared to him and what he does on the field that he's got to be right for them to do well. Now, the good news, as you said, is that they had the lengthy layoff, and so it certainly appears that he is right going into the game against the Bears. All the reports out of practice are positive. He's not been limited in any way. So that's a good thing. The concern, however, is that a couple of Packers linemen are going to be out. Josh Sitton and TJ Lang. Well, I shouldn't say they're going to be out. They are carrying injuries into the weekend, and there is speculation that they may miss the game, Josh Sitton, TJ Lang. So, you know, you wonder about their ability to protect Aaron Rodgers. You wonder if that will affect their ability to run the ball, especially against a Chicago Bears defense that looks like it could be vulnerable to the running game.
They could be vulnerable to just about anything.
Well, that's true. They certainly are not the monsters in the midway anymore. On the flip side, look, the Packers are pretty darn vulnerable to running the ball as well. Matt Forte had a heck of a game the last time these two teams met. You might remember neither team punted the ball. It was a very rare occurrence in NFL history that neither team punted the ball.
And it almost happened again, I think, against the Saints,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
There was like one punt towards the end of the game.
I think it's some crazy stat, like there have been three games in NFL history where there were no punts and the Packers have been involved in two of them, something like that. But the upshot is that the Bears were able to move the ball against the Packers as well the last time they met. And the real reason the Packers won that game is because Jay Cutler threw a couple of interceptions and made some mistakes, and the Packers were able to capitalize. I don't know that there's any reason to believe things will be much different this time. I expect the Packers to be able to move the ball and the Bears to move the ball as well. And it really could come down to who makes more mistakes. Given their track records, you would assume Jay Cutler will make more mistakes than Aaron Rodgers, but you won't know until you see it play out on the field.
It's an interesting equation with Aaron Rodgers because there are, I think, a lot of fans who watch Packers games and they get concerned anytime Aaron Rodgers leaves the pocket. They remember what happened last year with his collarbone and just this past game when he tweaked his hamstring against New Orleans. But at the same time, the Packers have to think that one of the reasons they are dangerous is because Aaron Rodgers is so effective when he is able to leave the pocket.
Yeah, I think that's one of his more underrated traits is his mobility in the pocket. You know, everybody complains about how he holds the ball too long. And a part of that is because he doesn't want to throw an interception. But I think another part of that is because he can get away with holding the ball so long. He is really adept at avoiding sacks. And look, he's not Michael Vick. He's not Steve Young of old. He doesn't have that level of mobility where you're going to build a running game around him.
But he's not Peyton Manning.
Exactly. He's certainly evasive enough that he can keep a play alive and turn something big from keeping that play alive. I mean, just look at the game against the Bears last year where he sidestepped the sack and hit Randall Cobb for the game-winning touchdown. So I really do think that's one of his more underrated aspects as a quarterback.
Finally, a quick turn to baseball. The free agent signing period is underway, but even before that, the Brewers made some noise in the hot stove league by finally getting a starting first baseman, which you could argue came a little late for this past season, but they went out and traded pitching for a proven bat.
Yeah, unfortunately, Adam Lind won't help them make the 2014 playoffs because
they are mathematically eliminated
exactly,
at this point.
I believe that ship has sailed, and congratulations to San Francisco Giants fans, and apologies if you're a Ned Yost fan. But the Brewers acquired Adam Lind from the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for Marco Estrada, which is kind of surprising because Estrada was basically a candidate to be non-tendered by the Brewers this year. They were basically, you know, possibly going to lose him for nothing. And the fact that they've turned Marco Estrada into Adam Lind, who is a left-handed hitting first baseman with some power, who hits for a really good average, that's pretty impressive. Now, the knock against Lind, there's two of them, really. One, he can't hit left-handers to save his life, so you're going to have to acquire a right-handed bat to play first base in a platoon situation. That's a little less concerning when Lind is lefty because you're going to face far more right-handers than you are left-handers. So he's getting the heavy end of the platoon there. The second concern is that he's been a little injury-prone of recent years. He broke his foot recently. He's had back troubles. And so that's a bit of a red flag. But his salary is very manageable. I believe it's in the $7 to $8 million range over the next couple of years. And again, the Brewers got him at a cut-rate price from the trade asset that they had to give up. Marco Estrada probably did not project to be a member of the starting rotation next year. He'd have been a long reliever in the bullpen in insurance in case a starter goes down. And frankly, they've got guys in the minor leagues who can take that role.
He is what you would call organizational depth.
Yeah, very much. I mean, look, Marco Estrada, I think when you remember that the Brewers basically acquired him for nothing, they got him off the scrap heap when I believe it was the Washington Nationals released him in spring training a few years back. The Brewers just picked him up, and he was very effective when he was called upon. But he was not as effective as you'd like him to be last year. I believe he allowed more home runs than any other pitcher in the league, and that's not a good scenario when you're pitching half your games in Miller Park. I think he was effective when he was here, but I also think he wasn't so effective that you're not going to terribly miss him, especially when you're bringing in a guy like Adam Lind, who provides such a need in your lineup. I mean, the Brewers were a right-handed heavy-hitting lineup. Lind balances that out with left-handed ability. He provides he's going to play first base, which is a position you really haven't filled adequately since Prince Fielder left. So I think it's a great trade for the Brewers. They also, re-signed Aramis Ramirez.
Yeah.
They re-signed Giovanni Gallardo. They made it official that Ricky Weeks won't be back. So they've made a fair number of important moves already. You have to believe they're going for it again next season. And so because of that, it's possible that Doug Melvin might not be done making moves. It's one of those stay tuned situations because as set as the lineup and the pitching rotation appears to be, you never know with Melvin and Attanasio. They're always looking to improve their team.
And pitchers and catchers report in about 3.5 months.
Who's counting?
Howie, thanks.
Thanks, Mitch.
Howie Magner writes the Sports Nut column for Milwaukee Magazine's website, and he's senior editor of the magazine. He's also our regular sports contributor.
We'll take one last break and then meet award-winning author Dory Greenspan. Her newest book, Baking Chez Moi, is guaranteed to have you salivating. Stay tuned for more of Lake Effect in just a moment.